Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Today is Father's Day, and to celebrate the day, we're talking with two poets whose writing is strongly influenced by their relationships with their fathers. First, we have Marjorie Maddox, whose book of poems, Transplant, Transport, Transubstantiation, focuses on her father's unsuccessful heart transplant. Maddox is the director of creative writing and a professor of English at Lock Haven University. She has won numerous awards for her poetry and multiple Pushcart Prize nominations. Todd Davis has also been nominated for the Pushcart and has won the Gwendolyn Brooks Poetry Prize. Davis teaches at Penn State Altoona. His newest book of poetry, just out this month from Michigan State University Press, is In the Kingdom of the Ditch. Davis's poems have been featured on Garrison Keillor's The Writer's Almanac, which airs on WPSU weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Maddox and Davis talked with WPSU's Emily Reddy about writing about fathers.
I thought it might be fun to start out our conversation with one of Todd Davis's poems from The Writer's Almanac. Something our listeners might recognize, at least the voice of Garrison Keillor here. So this is the poem, While We Wait for Spring.
Here's a poem for today by Todd Davis, entitled While We Wait for Spring. The last 3 days, snow has fallen, no thaw this year, no day even above 20 since the end of December. Climbing the hill, my two boys slip, fall, stand again. They complain, but there's nothing to be done except to make it to the top, where above the trees we will look down upon the river. Near the peak, a barred owl releases from the limb of a bur oak, sweeps over our heads and out above the tree line. Our eyes follow its flight to the river ice, current moving beneath its blue surface. Like the owl, our breath rises, drifts towards something warmer, something better.
I've got to say, I do that a little bit for my own benefit. I always wonder what poets think of Garrison Keillor's delivery of their work.
First, it's always a great gift when Garrison Keillor reads a poem of yours. It means that the work's going to reach a lot of listeners who may not interact with poetry in any other way. I happen to be a huge fan of Garrison Keillor, and my oldest son, who's now 18, has been a fanatical listener of Prairie Home Companion since he was about 8 years old. And so while maybe early on he didn't think Dad being a poet was all that cool, when Garrison read that poem, I moved up in the book.
Well, Marjorie, I thought maybe we could start with you talking about the poetry a little bit more. A heart transplant, I mean, it's so symbolic. At what point in your father's medical treatments did you decide that poetry needed to be written about this?
I think that I've been writing about my father in various versions for a long time. And as you said, this idea of his heart troubles really does kind of go to the heart of the matter of a lot of things that I write about anyways. I write a lot about the body and kind of the intersection of the natural and spiritual, about relationships in families. Maybe I'll read a poem from an earlier book just as introduction. My father had his first heart attack when he was 39.
Wow.
He lived until 65. He was always an extremely optimistic person, though, very kind of giving person, quite a jokester. But I grew up with sirens coming to the house in the middle of the night a lot, and so that precariousness was kind of a part of our lives. So this particular poem, kind of as a way of introduction, is called Growing Up Dying, and it's from my first book, Perpendicular Eye. You taught me to breathe with the sirens when I was 10. You with your shirt ripped wide, you flat on your back like a beach bum, but pale as a shade less than sand. By 20, I marked time by your pulse, clocked years by the waiting. the color of your eyes scratched gray like the underside of a shoe every time. Your tongue clumped uncomfortably against your teeth, and me kneading the beat from your chest. This is the wire we hop from, twirling between the twigs towards ground, sky. Like an almost good dancer, the lopsided thump of your heart pumps behind mine, gives me fear and breath and flight. And the kneading in that poem, it might be important to know, is like kneading and bread. And, you know, I did have one instance where I had to give him CPR, you know, when I was just a youngster. So this is kind of the background, I think, of some of the poems. And he got his heart during the blizzard of 93. Someone was in a car accident, and that's the way he got his heart.
Would you like to read the poem about that?
Sure.
The first one from this new book. The new book is Transplant, Transport, Transubstantiation.
Yes, and this is actually a book that's been out a little while. My newer one's coming out later this summer. But I was really struck when I started writing this poem about the idea of someone else's heart being buried inside of my father. Treacherous driving. It's as safe as traveling to work, a cardiologist before performing a transplant. The first night of the blizzard, that stranger inched into Ohio. Halfway through, he skidded into our snow-spackled lives. His heart is buried in my father, who is buried. This is the hole in the stranger, in my father, in my own cracked chest. Hail cupped in its cavity, the aorta beginning to freeze. All winter, the weather preaches white lies, fields blank of roads, a curve straightened, the even light of sky. Tonight, the breeze is all icicles, banner-like from the clouds. Nothing is movable in this treacherous state. Our wheels spin, their rhythm a breath that pulls us, then stalls. The law of the body, of the state, cannot replace the chain reaction, jackknifed lives, hope piling into hope. The man and his heart, cold on an icy road, warmed us for weeks, while winter, a clear blue thing, wafted light.
Your father's heart transplant was ultimately unsuccessful?
The transplant itself took, and he lived for 3 weeks, but then his blood got infected. And I think it might have been partly that he was waiting so long for the transplant. He was in the hospital for 8 months waiting for it. And so he had to have his legs amputated and his fingers amputated. And he had originally been a dentist, but when he got so sick, he became a photographer. So the idea of him losing these limbs and fingers and being a photographer, I think, was really, really hard to take.
So what did you do in those weeks that the heart did extend his life?
I tried to get back to Ohio. I don't know if listeners will remember what that blizzard was like, but all the roads were shut down. If you remember, you couldn't even walk outside. You couldn't do anything. You know, you were really holed up. And, you know, of course, I talked quite a bit on the phone as much as I could with my family. And then I eventually was able to get back, and I went back and forth as much as I could.
Snow plays a big part in that poem, and
sure,
nature shows up in many of your poems. But it's like another character in your poems, Todd. It's it's just such you have such a way of really bringing people into the sights and smells and touch of it. And we're not talking the lovely vistas of Pennsylvania, but more the gritty, the earthy. And I wondered, you're from Tipton, Pennsylvania. That's where you live now.
That's where I live now, yes.
How much is this Tipton that we're seeing in your poems, or is it somewhere else?
No, it truly is Tipton. My boys go to Bellwood High School. In Bellwood, that's the village just south of Tipton. And above those two villages are two sets of game lands 108 and 158. and it now comprises about 41,000 acres of about as wild a section of woods as you'll get unless you head up into far northern New York or into Maine for here on the eastern seaboard. And as you say, it becomes a character. It truly is fused with my life. I usually am in the woods at least 4 or 5 days a week. I'm a professor of environmental studies. I get to take my students on field trips into these game lands as well. And this comes down through a patrilineal line to me. My father's father was a dirt poor farmer in Kentucky, in central Kentucky. He had a first grade education. My grandmother had a fourth grade education. And my father became a veterinarian, but he went to a one-room schoolhouse, and I wouldn't be a poet if it weren't for my father. He was made to memorize verse in that one-room schoolhouse, and so when I worked at the animal hospital with my father, he would recite John Greenleaf Whittier or Robert Frost, certainly John Keats. Those were some of his favorites. And so I learned the names for trees, for plants. I learned all kinds of wild edibles from my grandfather and my father. And there was always, in their mind, a notion of sacredness in the natural world, and that we owed a great debt to the natural world. It was the world that sustained us. And you said how it's not just the beautiful vistas. Alfred Lord Tennyson, in a very famous poem from the 19th century called In Memoriam, says that nature is red in tooth and claw. He said it as a negative. I grew up with a farmer, grandfather, who was the man who was called at hog slaughter. This was when communities would participate together for different kinds of harvests. He was the best person at sticking the hog, bleeding it out quickly, and he taught me a lesson that this animal's life – one, you would care for it as best you could, so he would have hated factory farming now and hog confinement operations, but that you took the life as swiftly as you could and you used every part of that life to honor that animal's life. And then my father became a veterinarian, and so I was around him trying to save animals' lives all the time. But there was never a turning away from those natural processes, you know, the predator, the prey, how we ourselves as omnivores are going to consume the world to sustain our health.
There was one of these that I thought was quite visceral. Would you read the poem Limbo, which
sure.
is in your newest book, mm-hmm. In the Kingdom of the Ditch?
Sure. In each book, somehow I return to the issue of birth. And this is a poem about different kinds of births that I've witnessed. Again, I'm in the woods often doing field research and observing, so I have certainly seen different animals born in the woods. But ultimately, it's about my first son and his birth as well. Limbo. What of those of us who are halfway here, almost of this world, yet shuddering in the antechamber of the pelvis, muscle pushing out against hands that grab from below, and of those hoofed creatures battering themselves against some tree to release what they've carried into the yellow home of this day, and the winged seed beneath the shell, offspring who would do anything to be baptized into air. What do we believe happens to those who remain unborn, or, worse yet, live for only minutes? The doe wags her bottom, fawn dangling from the red jelly of her womb, while a coyote watches in the dense laurel. When the heart begins to beat for itself, there's no promise of salvation. Every fall, steelhead swim from open lakes to the streams where they spawn in gravel beds, tails fanning with passion that covers regret. And my own child, unwilling to quit his mother's body, even as forceps gripped the sides of his head, doctor placing her foot on the foot of the bed, yanking with such force, I thought he would tear in two.
I almost thought that this might be, I don't even know if they use forceps anymore. I thought this might be you channeling your father watching a birth, because it seems to harken back to a time that's not now.
This was 18 years ago in DeKalb, Illinois. My son was actually born on my 30th birthday. And I luckily, when I was born in 1965, my father, you know, wasn't even allowed in the birthing area. And my mother, actually, they often would put the mother out right before the birth. So she didn't even see my birth. But yes, it was a tough birth. And she literally put her foot up on the bed and was pulling. And I thought, is this a safe thing to do? And then the bed actually moved a bit, and she asked the nurses, now, we've got the bed breaks on, right? And they all said yes. And I thought, this can't be happening. But he was healthy, a healthy birth eventually, and has grown to be quite a young man.
Wow. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Emily Reddy. In honor of Father's Day, we're talking with poets Marjorie Maddox and Todd Davis. They both write poetry about their fathers and about the experience of being a parent. Now, this is a question for both of you, but Marjorie, maybe you could start. I was wondering as I read these, just how different it is for you to write about someone while they're still around versus after they're gone. I mean, is there any bit of hesitation that's lifted because you know that they won't be reading the poetry or anything like that?
Hmm. I think maybe less than considering whether or not they'll read the poetry. In writing about my father, there needed to be kind of a separation because of grief, you know, and maybe kind of working through that. So I did need a little bit of distance, I think, before I could write some of the poems. In my newest collection that's coming out, I write a lot about my children. And obviously, they're right in front of me. But a lot of that, too, is about raising a family in an unsafe world, and specifically in a world of school shootings and things like that. We see almost, you know, every day these horrendous acts that are taking place. And how do you deal with, you know, that?
Now, you said that you needed some distance because of grief. I mean, how long before you could put these poems down on paper?
I think it was a few years before I was writing some of them. And I think there were a lot of poems that I wrote that, you know, then I kind of trashed too, that it was more kind of an exercise. I'm not a firm believer in poetry as therapy, because sometimes I think that leaves out the idea of craft. But there is a way of discovery in poetry where you're finding out what you think and what you mean by going through that process of writing these things down and crafting them.
How about you, Todd? Do you need that distance?
I think with all poetry, ultimately, it may not be necessarily in the drafting process that you need that distance, but in the revision process. And that's where the craft may come into play most heavily, for the poem to become a fully realized poem that's going to work for an audience that may have never met you, the subjects that you're writing about, their distance may be necessary. I know for myself, I said I wouldn't have been a poet if it weren't for my father. Literally before his death to pancreatic cancer at the age of 81, I would call him several times a week and read drafts of poems that I was working on. I sent him in the mail poems in various drafts, and sometimes I would even be a bad writer and not keep earlier drafts of work, and I'd realize, oh no, a poem has gotten worse through the revision process, and I'd have to call him and say, Dad, do you still have that poem? And he would send me an earlier draft, because he was wonderful at not getting rid of anything that I had written. And so in a different way than Margie, when my father was in hospice the last 10 days of his life with the pancreatic cancer, I literally drafted a poem that's in the Kingdom of the Ditch, and it's called What We Do While We're Dying. My father and I, even the last few months of his life, once he got the diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, he was a very vigorous man, so we still would take walks on a nature trail. I got to spend over a month at the end of his life with him. And he said, all parts of living are beautiful, Todd. And he said, would I have chosen not to have pancreatic cancer? Yes. But he said, I've lived this long life, and even in these moments, there can be moments of joy and beauty. So I suppose I tried to honor him in writing some poems about his dying as well as his living. What we do while we're dying. All I can think about is what's going on in my father's head as he rests in the hospice bed. My grandmother would have said there were angels hovering near, waiting to gather his soul. The morphine pump kicks in every 10 minutes, and with his head back, the mouth gapes, showing us the space between his incisors. When he could eat, which seems like 100 years ago, he'd take a bite of apple and separate the skin from the meat, then push the red or yellow silk through the ivory fence of his teeth. After this many days, I think that's what he's doing, chewing over his soul, preparing to slip it through the body's swinging gate.
I was actually about to ask you to read that one. I really like that image with the apple.
I can tell you why that's there. My father was an ag major at University of Kentucky. And remember, he grew up on a farm as well. And there was heavy DDT use during that time. And so I grew up with a father saying, if you can't skin the apple, you take the skin off in your mouth and spit it out and then eat the meat, because, of course, the heavy pesticides, including DDT, but the heavy pesticides were on the skin of the apple. And so I just grew up with him doing that. Mm-hmm. And it ultimately became a metaphor there towards the end of his life in that poem.
And did you write this poem in the moment that it illustrates, or looking back on
it? No, I literally wrote that in the room while I was by his bedside. And I couldn't have done that as a younger writer. And I wrote many poems that were failed poems during this time too. But one of the things you train yourself as a writer to do is to attend in that moment.
Sure.
And so I literally was in such pain over the grief of losing. He truly was my absolute best friend in the world. In the pain of losing him, I tried to focus, though, and say, he said, even in these moments, be fully present in these moments. Mm-hmm. And it was a much longer poem originally, but it was attending to that moment because I didn't want to, I wanted to honor that moment as well, not forget it.
I think that joy that you're talking about is something that I received as a gift from my father, too, this idea of joy of living, even in difficult struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really wonderful attribute for someone to have, I think,
mm-hmm.
and to pass on.
Actually, you talk about that joy of living. It makes me think of one of your poems. It's about when your father was young. And I think it's interesting because your father is younger, but you're contemplating your own age in the poem. This poem is called My Mother Gives Me a Tape of My Father's Dance Band. Could you read that poem?
Sure. And this was a wonderful gift actually from my mother, because after my father's death, she came upon some old recordings of when he was in a dance band when he was younger. And I grew up with him playing big band, boogie-woogie, all kinds of stuff on the piano. He had a broken pinky, but he'd still kind of stretch and get those keys. And so I would just play this over and over again when I was doing other things around the house. My mother gives me a tape of my father's dance band. My dead father plays boogie-woogie throughout the house. Even in the backyard, emptying the garbage, I hear his hands, 16 and agile, thumping, plinking, and doo-wopping along the thin tape that whirs in its recorder. What years wind up in that casing, in the canal of my ear, in the curving aorta pumping out his beat in my veins, in this aging staff of a body. At 60, he still loved his songs and stretched a broken pinky to hit the notes. My hands only snap and tap, the bones bumping up against age. Still, underneath flesh, I know something's jumping. Joy cracks his rhythm in notes, too strong to stay in the grave, too staccato to listen to sounds, good daying in the bass of a previous page, two-stepping still, though long, long since played.
Now, Marjorie, you talked a little bit about writing about your children. Todd, you write a lot about your children in your poetry. I thought maybe you could read one of your poems about your children from your book, Some Heaven. The poem is, and I felt like this was a suitable for Father's Day, A Father's Notes.
When I got married, my wife, I could see she was wonderful with children, and I knew we would have children in the future, and I was scared to death of it. And oddly, it wasn't. I've had friends whose fathers hadn't been such great fathers, and I think they were scared to death because they might not be a good father. I'd had this wonderful father, and I was scared I couldn't be as good a father as he was. And so this was written when they were fairly young, and I thought to myself, you've got to write yourself some notes on how to be a father. And so it literally started that way. And then it turned into a poem, and I thought, how wonderful, I can give this to them later on so they know at least I tried. Wrote some exam notes for being a father. A Father's Notes. I must remember, now you are nearly 8 and your brother 5, that my anger passes to you so easily, climbs the river's bank and floods the field, drags part of the earth back with it, then carries us far away from each other. And when I come into your room in the early hours of the new day, I should listen to your breathing, touch the back of your head, follow the pattern your hair makes, light strands at the side of your face, my mouth close to your ear, asking forgiveness for the ways I fail you, predictable as my own father's failures. And all of this will lead to those times when you look across a field where no one has stepped since the snow stopped falling. In this place, do not forget, there are paths we cannot see, that while no animal's track marks the river, there is still direction without its print. Consider the wind, busy all night as it moved from tree to tree. It offers one way, the snow another. Whichever you choose, know I will follow.
It's lovely.
Thank you. We all fail as parents, but if you can guarantee your kids, right, that you love them and that you're going to follow them as they go on with their passions. Mm-hmm. And that's what my father gave me. He could have easily grew up in a factory town. He was a veterinarian. He could have easily said, Todd, why do you want to major in English and to become a poet of all things? So it's a gift.
Well, happy Father's Day, Todd.
Thank you.
And thank you both for coming and talking about poetry about fathers and about parenting.
Thank you.
That was WPSU's Emily Reddy talking with poets Todd Davis and Marjorie Maddox. Davis is a professor at Penn State Altoona. His most recent book is In the Kingdom of the Ditch. Maddox is the director of creative writing and a professor of English at Lock Haven University. Her upcoming book, Local News from Someplace Else, comes out in July. To learn more about both poets featured today or to listen to archived interviews in the Take Notes series, check the links at our website, wpsu.org/take-note.